Welcome, everybody, to this very special edition of the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer for BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined by my co-host, Brian.
Hey there.
And we are here to have our 2014 fantasy football preview draft-tacular show.
Something. Fantasy.
So this week, you know, a lot of people, myself included, and I'm sure a lot of you out there are having your fantasy football drafts, and we would be remiss here at the F-Ball NFL podcast if we didn't provide you with a handy-dandy little draft preview guide, and there's no better person to help us along with that task than Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football.
Of course.
As you may know, he is a repeated guest here on the podcast. He's an MVP. He's a Hall of Famer. He's an All-Pro. He's a Pro Bowler.
Something like that.
In terms of this podcast.
One and or all of those.
And he's going to join us for an in-depth look at a lot of the more controversial and interesting players for this fantasy football season and strategies. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends, all kinds of different teams, you know, from Josh Gordon and his whenever he's going to be suspended to the concept of zero running back and everything in between. And we wanted to get you the very best fantasy football preview that we could possibly put together here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. So we decided to have Johnny on and to have it be its own standalone special edition episode for this week, for this Monday evening. So I hope you all enjoy.
Absolutely.
We're going to be back right after this break with Rumford Johnny, and we're going to break down everything that you need to know about the 2014 fantasy football season.
Jumping right in.
Stay tuned. This is, of course, our F-Ball NFL podcast fantasy football draft-tacular preview special for 2014. And, you know, we can't be talking about fantasy football here at the F-Ball podcast without MVP, All-Pro, Pro Bowl guest, Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football. So he's, of course, joining us here this evening. Hey, Johnny, how's it going?
It's going well. I love that multi-layered blooming onion, if you will, of a introduction. It's very delicious and salty and deep fried. I like it.
She did leave off that you're our inaugural Hall of Fame member too.
Yes. Oh, yes. Hall of Famer. Inaugural Hall of Famer. Also.
We don't nice. Leave out the orange jacket. You know.
Orange jacket. I like the orange jacket. That's cool.
Yeah, we pick them up from the local like hunting and farming supply store.
Yeah. Safety. Love it. Safety first, baby.
So of course we're here to talk about fantasy football, and I wanted to start with you know, there's a developing situation kind of, you know, that happened over the weekend with Sam Bradford, the Rams quarterback, tearing his left ACL again, second time in 10 months. So he's done for the year. So what does that mean for Sean Hill, who's ostensibly, you know, because they have no other choice right now at quarterback, going to be the starter for this year? So what does Sean Hill now have fantasy value comparable at least to that of Sam Bradford, if not, you know, worthy of at least being a starter? And what does it, you know, what does this do for the Rams offense in general in terms of, you know, you want to draft any of these guys or not?
Well, first of all, yes, it gives you some in deep leagues and maybe in two quarterback leagues, Sean Hill has some value and actually some really good value. If you remember, really didn't miss a beat when he was in Detroit with Calvin Johnson, actually had a couple of good games there. You know, he's a good, solid, you know, NFL starter. I mean, he's not going to do anything special or spectacular, but he's going to be able to run that offense and run it well. And actually made the argument in my my fantasy preview on this on the Two Mugs website that I actually prefer Sean Hill to Sam Bradford because of these types of things. And I'm not, again, that's not a knock on Bradford because of you know, him as a quarterback, but he's been through so much. And I think this is kind of one of the last sort of straws for him. I don't know what his future is going to be like, but in terms of St. Louis, I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing for them. I think their identity was through the run game anyway, and I think they planned on, you know, running Zach Stacy, you know, and Benny Cunningham, and I think that's really what they want to do. And some Trey Mason sprinkled into towards the end of the year, and I think that's really what they really wanted to do. They wanted to play strong defense, although they've had some injuries now on the back end. The defense really doesn't help them much, but I do think that they really wanted to do that. Jeff Fisher, run the football, play really, you know, smash mouth defense and really win that way. And I think they've shown that they can win in their division that way, probably a little bit more this year now that the division's a little depleted. Arizona's had some injuries as well. San Francisco's got some suspensions looming and injuries as well. So there are definitely winnable games for them in that division. As far as fantasy goes, I mean, you could spot start somebody like Sean Hill in a pinch. I wouldn't want to use him every week. I mean, I know people that stream, like some of our buddies like CD Carter and JJ Zacharyson, they love to stream. And I think those are really the types of quarterbacks that you want to ideally match up week to week in daily leagues and in best ball formats where you draft a team and you leave it alone. You don't change, you know, quarterbacks, so you don't move your roster around at all. In a situation like that, Sean Hill might actually have a couple of really good games in that scenario. So, and you can get him, you know, with your last pick essentially. So yeah, he's in a good situation. Again, the wide receivers, I don't put much stock into this year. I think it's a gang of, you know, wide receiver threes really that you hope are going to like break out this year, but I really don't have a lot of faith in them. I think this really centered around the run game. They drafted to really support the run game with Greg Robinson. So I think, you know, that's where I'm focused really is drafting Zach Stacy in round three and not really worrying about anybody else. And if you're going to stream a quarterback, then you're going to use Sean Hill maybe in a really good matchup, I think.
Right. I mean, I think Sean Hill has a lot of upside over, if Sam Bradford were still healthy, just because there's always the if Sam Bradford stays healthy kind of caveat with him that makes you really, you know, wary about having him as your fantasy quarterback. At the very least, if you're in a deeper league or you're kind of hard up for a quarterback, you don't look at Sean Hill and say, oh, but what about a high ankle sprain or an ACL? You know, you just sort of look at him as being like, well, he's not going to be super flashy. He's probably not going to make a ton of mistakes, but he's not going to, you know, have this Peyton Manning thing. He's not going to become Kurt Warner. This isn't 1999. He's probably not going to become Kurt Warner. But in the sense, you know, I feel like you look at Sean Hill being the starter there now, and he's just so much less risky to me than Sam Bradford would be. So if I were in a deeper league or a two quarterback league, I would be looking, you know, at Sean Hill now, you know, much more than I'd be looking at Sam Bradford a week ago.
The knowing what you're getting.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Brian.
No, I was just saying that you know what you're getting into a little more than you did with Bradford. It maybe doesn't have the upside Bradford did, but maybe you feel a bit more
his floor isn't comfortable. As low.
Well, you feel more comfortable with that you're going to get steady performance out of him.
Yeah, and I think also, like as I, you know, started to point out with the run game, I think people are probably more concerned about Sean Hill as a runner.
Right.
Than they would be Bradford, who's really a traditional pocket passer, doesn't have a lot of great mobility. You know, he's in that Tom Brady, Ryan Mallett, you know, pigeons will poop on me because I'm a statue kind of an athlete in terms of, you know, pocket awareness and movement. Hill certainly can get, you know, pick up some yards with his feet. And I think that actually helps the run game a little bit because they'll have to be aware of him taking off too on foot. So it does help the runners a little bit. They won't be stacking the box as much because he is a little bit more mobile.
Moving on to a couple of players who've had a lot of, you know, been riding on that hype train this summer, New Orleans Saints rookie receiver Brandon Cooks and San Diego Chargers tight end Ladarius Green. It seems like the Brandon Cooks hype train, it took a little bit of a hit, you know, about a month ago, and now it seems to really be going strong, whereas people are kind of pumping the brakes a little bit on Ladarius Green now that we're seeing that, you know, Antonio Gates isn't about to give up that, you know, tight end one position, you know, just yet, and with Phillip Rivers also, you know, playing quite well. You know, what are you seeing happening right now in drafts with Brandon Cooks and with Ladarius Green?
Well, it really depends. I mean, you know, you can participate in a number of different mocks where you're you know, public mocks where you're drafting with, you know, the average person who likes to, you know, have a few year-long drafts every year, or in a mock with industry people. We like to say industry and not expert because it sounds really, you know,
highfalutin.
I don't know. Yeah, kind of
presumptuous.
But, yeah, a little bit. So industry people, because people that are doing this really from, you know, the winter up until now, essentially, and getting prepared for the drafts. Real super geeks. So, and if you're in those leagues, people really kind of understand the value of these two players. And with Cooks, he's really the wide receiver three. Let's be honest. Okay. And maybe wide receiver four if you look at the running backs and how they're going to be utilized. So the reality is that people are really excited in, you know, mocks, public mocks, because he's getting drafted higher than even somebody on his own team like Marcus Colston, which I think is crazy because Marcus Colston already has chemistry with Breeze. And Breeze has been out for a good part of the preseason, just recently played in this last game and looked really good after that oblique strain. So he'll be looking for Jimmy Graham and then Colston second. You know, Cooks will be involved and they'll utilize him. He's not all of a sudden going to become the number two target. It's just not going to happen.
He's a rookie.
Because he's a rookie and he's small. I mean, and he's, you know, and the reality is that Breeze is going to see that big target, that reliable, you know, Colston over the middle, and he's going to look at him before he's going to look at Cooks. It's just a reality. He's a bigger mismatch than Cooks is going to be. Cooks will be a nice component to that offense. I think he's certainly going to be doing some of the stuff that Sproles did, maybe with a little bit more toughness because he's built a little bit more solidly and probably will be a better addition long-term as a slot receiver. But the reality is if you're picking him over established, you know, veterans that probably can give you more, then, you know, I'm hands off. I'm not touching it. And he keeps ascending a little bit too in drafts. And I think that's really something that you should be aware of when he's going above somebody like a Roddy White or Marcus Colston. I mean, I'm taking those two guys all day over Brandon Cooks. It's kind of silly.
Agreed. I agree.
And as far as...
not that Green anybody is, in my I'm league sorry. Should know anything about what I'm saying here. No one in my league needs to hear about any of this.
Exactly. As far as Ladarius Green is concerned, I do like Green. Here's the rub on in fantasy leagues. Now, everybody wants to be the guy that, or the girl, that picks a player a year before everybody else to break out. You want to be the Ladarius Green person that picks them and starts them and they blow up that year and they have a great season and you say, well, this was the year that the wheels fell off for Antonio Gates. It's possible that that could still happen. It's possible that they could start introducing Ladarius Green into the lineup more often. You'll get more snaps and then therefore more targets. This year could be the year that he starts to suddenly eclipse Antonio Gates in production. But we haven't seen that so far. Last year, there was some indication that that might happen. But when he did get the start, he didn't really jump off the page. So maybe this is the year. As far as where they're being drafted, I don't think there's really that big of a disparity between the two tight ends. So they're kind of a wash, really. So I think if you do draft somebody like Ladarius Green, you really have to like take them as your second tight end. Hopefully that they drop. Hopefully he drops far enough and that you grab an established tight end first. Maybe even a high-end tight end like Gronk or, you know, Jimmy Graham or Julius Thomas early. And then maybe roll the dice on somebody like Green having that breakout year. Because if you do, then you have these two tight ends, especially in leagues where you can use a tight end flex. That potentially could be these red zone monsters that could have, you know, anywhere from like 12 to like 17 touchdowns, you know, in the red zone. Something that you really want to gun for, but you really want to hedge your bets too. You don't want to just say, okay, I'm going to take all the upside tight ends, you know, and just stack those at the end of my roster because they could all wash out.
Right.
And not really, really come up to where you expect them to be in terms of production. And you really took a risk and you got a little too cute. I said that in my article. I said, really hedge your bets. Grab a guy like Heath Miller, who'll probably be the number two in Pittsburgh this year. Mm-hmm. You know, because he looks healthy and looks like Ben Roethlisberger is targeting him. I'm not scared of Wheaton at all. I think, you know, Heath Miller is the guy in the red zone for him, other than Brown on deep throws. So there are guys like that that you can grab and say, I have more faith in some of those veteran players producing over some of these upside guys. So I'm going to hedge my bets and draft both of them. One as a backup. And if they both, you know, have great years, then awesome. But, you know, don't just expect to say, okay, I'm going to draft Travis Kelce, Ladarius Green, every other potential breakout tight end candidate that really didn't show you anything last year that would say, oh boy, this is going to be that huge year that they make that leap. You really need to really insulate yourself from not making, you know, a colossal mistake and having to scramble on the waiver wire to grab some scrub to fill in 1 week. So
exactly, you know, because you bring up Travis Kelce, and that's another really good point. Is yeah, if you stack up all these guys, you can get Ladarius Green later on. You can get Travis Kelce basically at the end of your draft, and then you have all these really boom or bust. Who knows what's going to happen this year? Kind of tight ends. And then, you know, let's say 1 week Kelce looks really great, and then he kind of, you know, hangs back a little bit for 2 weeks. Green looks good. Then you start driving yourself insane with these, you know, these guys who are just on the verge of breaking out. Because I do not doubt that there is going to be a point, whether it's this season or next season or whenever, where Ladarius Green is going to be a tight end to have in fantasy football. But if you gamble right on all of these, maybe this is a tight end to have, maybe this guy could break out, then you just, yeah, I mean, you end up, you know, you end up at best, you know, getting 1 or 2 points per week out of a guy who's not terribly reliable, not getting the snaps. Because if he's not on the field, he's not right going to get the targets. And then you just drive yourself crazy over these kind of marginal, these guys who are marginal, even though they're highly talented.
And you really, it's absolutely right. And you really want to actually hope that in your drafts, that somebody overpays for somebody because, right, you know, or if you're in, especially if you're in an auction draft or if they draft them a round too high in a redraft, you really want to hope that somebody in your league gets really excited over somebody because they're going to get them a few rounds too early. And that's going to just help push other players, maybe from other positions, running backs, wide receivers, that you're going to be able to get a little bit later because they went all in on a player that they believe is going to break out. I think that's always a bad move, and just to wait to see if one of those breakout players is available late. Another guy is Zach Ertz, who I like a lot, but you know, we know that Brent Celek is still going to be a red zone threat for that team. I mean, you know, he's a guy that's unbelievably physical over the middle, can take shots, and he's going to be targeted, you know, by Nick Foles. So I think that just to say Zach Ertz is going to be this top five tight end, you know, maybe not this year, maybe next year. I mean, right, while Celek is still around, he's still going to steal some of those touchdowns from week to week to week. And I think that really does kind of, you know, dilute the value of Zach Ertz a little bit. So it's another guy, too, that if you draft him as a standalone player, you might be disappointed this year.
Right. You know, rookie wide receivers are always, you know, risky fantasy football-wise. But, you know, a guy that everybody's talking about, and for good reason, is Kelvin Benjamin. Obviously, there's not a lot of receiving targets going on with the Carolina Panthers right now. He's, you know, he's raw, but he's big, he's physical, he's obviously a red zone threat. But now, you know, we have the report of Cam Newton with the rib fracture, and he's, you know, he's supposed to be ready for week one. But these are, you know, difficult injuries to heal, very, very, you know, painful injuries. It's going to affect his ability to throw frequently, accurately. So does Kelvin Benjamin's fantasy value take a significant hit with Newton's injury?
I think it does somewhat, but like you said, he does have 2 weeks to get ready. So that does help him a little bit. I do think that, you know, Cam Newton's a tough player. He's shown that already. He's kind of played through some injuries in the past already. And that's good. He's not a small, frail quarterback by any stretch. He's a big guy. So I think that does help. I think the 2 weeks off does help him. And, you know, I'm hopeful from everybody that I've talked to that really does understand some of these injuries a little bit better, you know, says that he can play through this injury. The hope is actually that the ankle is a little bit better, which was really what he was coming back from the surgery in the offseason. So as long as the ankle is better, I think he can protect his ribs a little bit better. And that's probably a good thing because we know that he can move. If his ankle's feeling good, then I think that he'll be okay. So I wouldn't worry about him. His ADP is very, very low, by the way, guys. He's still very much a value. And this latest, you know, injury will probably push him even further down in draft. So you could take a safer bet at the top of your draft and then still grab Cam Newton, or grab Cam Newton and maybe wait a little bit longer and grab somebody like Carson Palmer, you know, and maybe you have a guy that it's in a pass happy offense like Palmer that you feel pretty safe about. Yet, you know, you have that high upside of Cam Newton, who's been a top five, you know, fantasy quarterback for like three of the last 4 years. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really have too many fears about him. So as far as Benjamin is concerned, as long as Cam is okay, he's okay. I mean, I would be terrified if it was Derek Anderson. I don't think Benjamin has any value at all with Anderson.
Oh,
I think there's really,
just asking myself, who is backing up Cam Newton? And then you said,
it's the engineer of the Browns' only winning season since 1999, Derek
Anderson.
Ah, yes,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, obviously, that's not what you want to see.
No.
I think, you know, Cam's abilities really match up well with Benjamin's skill set. You know, he's a big-armed quarterback with a really tall, long-armed wide receiver who can really make those contested catches. So that's really kind of a match made in heaven. So hopefully that'll work out, and that'll be – as of right now, he's probably in the best scenario for wide receivers because they have no wide receivers in Carolina. He really is the guy.
It's him and Greg Olsen, really.
Really, and Greg Olsen's not 100% either, so –
Jericho Cotchery, guys.
Oh, right. Jericho Cotchery. You know, Jericho Cotchery could surprise.
And Jason Avant. Jason Avant, too.
Avant's a great possession receiver, too, so that should help.
Yeah, I mean, but these are old guys with with very little upside. So, I mean, the reality is that hopefully, as the season goes on, the value will be there for both players. And hopefully, if he starts out a little shaky, if they both start out shaky, that just means that you can ask another owner in your league for a trade, and you can probably get them at a discount. So that's actually not a bad thing if they start out a little slow and you have some backups in place that you can weather the storm through. And honestly, just if somebody else has them and they're getting sick of them and they want to get rid of them, you can get them for a song. So I think that that's something at least to keep an eye on. Again, 3 out of 4 years, top five fantasy quarterback. So, I mean, I have really no fear. I know a lot of people are pumping the brakes on him right now. That's actually really good because if the group thing starts to seep in a little bit among fantasy circles, you and I will say, well, I'm gonna zig when everybody else zags, and I'm gonna get this guy at a discount, stash him on my bench, and then by the end of the year, you know, he's gonna have some huge, like those Cam-like games where he runs for two touchdowns, throws for two touchdowns, and ends up with like 30 points. So that's what you really want to be looking for.
What really interests me is what's going on in the receiving situation for the Indianapolis Colts. We've got Reggie Wayne. He's back from his injury. He looks to be, you know, as close to 100% as he could possibly be. There's T.Y. Hilton, of course, Kobe Fleener, the addition of Hakeem Nicks. There's a lot of places where Andrew Luck can be throwing the football this year. Of those four guys, you know, who's the guy to covet and who's the guy to ignore?
I think you really want to still be drafting Reggie Wayne. I think he's
a
veteran wide receiver. He's a veteran wide receiver. I mean, he's in that same look. And this is the over 30 club. These are the guys that I want to draft. Reggie Wayne, you know, like I said, Colston. You know, I want Roddy White. I want those guys that we know what they do when they're healthy. Mm-hmm. When they're healthy, we know. I don't care how old they are. When they're healthy, they're as reliable can be. And, you know, they're gonna spread the ball around Indy anyway. The number one guy, the number one target is going to be Reggie Wayne because he plays out of the slot. And he's going to be, you know, the most reliable target when there's pressure up the gut. Because, look – we know Andrew Luck's going to get hit. That offensive line is an abomination.
Yeah.
And he was one of the most, like, assaulted quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, it just, that's just, and he's a tough kid. He can take it. But if you're doing that, you're going to want to check down to the slot mm-hmm. receiver. That's going to be Reggie Wayne. That's going to be his Mr. Reliable. And I have no problem, you know, taking him as especially if you can get him as a wide receiver three, and you can in a lot of instances. So I love taking him in drafts. Again, wide receiver three, you know exactly what you're going to get.
Yeah,
it's not going to be much waning in his value. It's going to be steady Eddie. You know, I'm looking at maybe, you know, a ceiling of like 80 catches. You know, I mean, I should say maybe a floor of 80 catches. We know Reggie Wayne can still get you that close to 90 if he wants, even though he's older and he's coming back from an injury, you know, close to 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns. I mean, I'll take that all day. So, especially as a wide receiver three. And I think that's his potential. Now, we'll have some big games for T.Y. Hilton, but, you know, I'd say that I'd stay away from him in a regular redraft league because I think he's somebody that's going to have huge games 1 week and then disappear off the map the next week.
Right.
Because then they're gonna, the next week, the defense is going to have a single high safety and he's not going to be open. And Reggie Wayne's going to have 11 catches.
Right.
And Dwayne Allen's going to have 2 touchdowns in the red zone, who, by the way, is another guy that I would draft late as a tight end who nobody's talking about still, and a guy that I loved last year, even though he's hurt the year before. Dwayne Allen, I think he's comes back as the red zone, one of the red zone binkies for Andrew Luck. So those are the guys I'm looking for. I'm drafting Ahmad Bradshaw late over Trent Richardson. I don't believe in Trent Richardson. I'm sorry.
Nope.
I'm sorry. I've watched
he had like
two
plays the other night that looked
off the
okay.
Yeah, he came.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. He had a couple.
He had 2 rushes for 13 yards. 2 rushes totaling 13 yards.
I mean,
do you understand what
this
means?
Average-wise, that's like a lot better than he ever has done.
I mean, the reality is Trent Richardson has bad vision, okay?
Yep.
He dances at the line of scrimmage. He's a big back. He has no business doing that when you're that size. He should just be dropping his shoulder and be like Frank Gore and plowing through any daylight that he sees. Running back, I don't care what anybody says, even with bad blocking, a good, strong running back will drop his shoulder and give you 4 to 5 yards minimum. And I think that's what he could do, but he doesn't do it. He's a big back who thinks he's a small back, and he's not. Ahmad Bradshaw, we know again, another guy. We know exactly who he is, Andrea. You draft him. He's going to be a guy that's going to produce for you, and you're going to get him in the 11th round as opposed to Trent Richardson that people still are crossing their fingers, lighting Mexican shrine candles for. He's never going to be that guy again. And he's gonna disappoint you. He's going to break your heart. You know, he's Fredo from The Godfather. He's going to break your heart. Don't draft him. It's going to be a mistake. Trust me. I know there are people still saying, well, now, because everybody hates him, his value now is going to bounce back, and he's going to be nobody wants him, so you might as well pull him off the heat. No, don't draft him, because he's going to do exactly that, and you're going to be sad, and he's going to burn you because he's burned a lot of people before, and we saw it even after a year removed from being in that offense, he's still the same guy.
You know? What's shocking to me about Trent Richardson is like you said, you know, he's this big back who should be able to, you know, create yards on his own, and that it's so surprising to me that he's proved to be so offensive line dependent. And if he's with this Colts team, which I mean, and it doesn't even matter because he wasn't producing much with the Browns, who have a pretty strong run blocking line. But you know, then you put him with the Colts, you know, the whole line is still, you know, a mess, which is also something that's so shocking considering the high value of their quarterback. You put those things together and I mean, Trent Richardson should not be the running back that he's proven to be, but I guess, that's who he is. And there's little to no, you're just going to start pulling your hair out and cursing the moment that you ever decided to draft him.
For everybody that always points to the offensive line and says that's trash, all you have to say is 2 words: Donald Brown. He did just fine behind that trash offensive line.
True.
Right.
Okay.
He was decisive.
So, and Donald Brown was thought of. Donald Brown was thought of as a guy that was kind of a bust, and he finally broke out behind that crap offensive line last year. So, again, that's your prime example when everybody says, well, it's the offensive line. Well, he should be plowing through that line more so than Donald Brown. And Donald Brown was way more decisive, had better vision in that offense than he did. So, again, I'm hands off with him. I'll let somebody else draft him. And there'll be a wave of sentiment that will kind of push him back up again. Because everybody hates him. Nobody wants to draft him. Good. Let that build up, because someone else is going to get pushed down, like Frank Gore, you know, one of those guys, or like Ben Tate, where people are like, oh, it's about, you know, that's Terrence West. Don't have a friend. Just let those guys fall, because you're going to get them a little bit later now, and everybody's going to get elevated it's going to be a bad situation, and they're going to see some of these other guys falling as a result, because they're going to just be this wave of sentiment that pushes him back up, because, you know, people are going to have hope that he's going to be a bounce back candidate. I don't see any indication that says to me that he's going to bounce back. And look, if he does,
he is going to bounce back. He's going to bounce back off of blockers and lose yardage.
Yes, off of somebody's buttocks. Yeah, exactly. And actually, you know, he did something in the game. I'll say this. He did something in the game that you don't do almost ever if you're an NFL running back, okay?
Yeah.
He put his hand on an offensive lineman to lead block for him.
Yeah.
Which is the dumb mistake, because you're only going to go as far as that offensive lineman goes off of the line of scrimmage. It's the dumbest thing in the world. It makes no sense. It's like
He does it all the time. He did it in Cleveland. He did it all last year in Indy. He does it all the time.
Getting me all fired up, Andrew.
See? Just let the record show that there will be no debate on where you stand on this issue.
however, another Alabama running back who is appearing poised for a rebirth, and that is Mark Ingram. I'm very excited about Mark Ingram this year. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but I will say this about that stable of running backs. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Right. I think people who are getting excited about, the New Orleans running backs, and people that are getting excited about the San Diego running backs are going to get a box of six of each of those running backs. You're going to basically get the same output from three running backs across the board, more or less, with not much differentiation. So I'll say this. The running back that you can get the latest on those teams, that's the one that you should be picking up.
Okay.
So if it should happen that Mark Ingram is the last guy available of that stable, then you draft him.
Right.
If he's not and he ascends, then stay away from him. It's that simple, because they're all going to be about the same. In the end game, they're all going to produce about the same. And get the guy that's the best value. And that's how I look at it. I'm not saying I'm not down on Mark Ingram. I'm just saying, what if Kyrie Robinson's available a little bit later? I think Kyrie Robinson probably is a better all-around back than Ingram is. And, you know, why wouldn't you take him a few rounds later? Now, I don't know. I haven't looked at ADP for these three running backs lately, because they do kind of change it intermittently. So, the next time I take a look, I'll just say, look, that's the one I want now. You know, same thing in San Diego, you know, with, you know, Matthews and Woodhead and Donald Brown, who's going last? I'd rather have the one that's going last, because even if you don't get any use out of them, maybe if they move them around a little bit, somebody's going to get hurt on one of those, you know, those running back tables. They always do. It just happens every year. So the guy that you get late is probably going to have better value because of where you drafted him, because his role then will increase. Even if they're all split up 33% across the board, he's going to inherit more of a role later on, and then therefore he'll return a bigger value for you.
Unless you get the one that gets hurt.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go.
There's that to consider. So therefore, Ryan Matthews, don't –
Watch always out. With the jokes. Always with the jokes, Brian.
So there are two guys with the Browns. There's a lot of questions for, you know, everybody's saying that Johnny Manziel has draft ability. because Brian Hoyer isn't long for this starting job. And then, of course, we got the Josh Gordon situation where Roger Goodell has conveniently continued to put off announcing whatever or deciding whatever is to be decided, whether it's zero games the entire season or a settlement or agreement that reduces it to 6 or 8 or 10 games. What should people be doing about Josh Gordon? Is Johnny Manziel a guy that you can draft now and stash for later, or is he just a guy to keep an eye on just in case, you know, after that week 4 bye, the Browns decide to take a different direction?
All right, let me get to I'll get to the Gordon question in a second, but let me start with Manziel.
Sure.
With Manziel, the situation is after the bye, he's probably going to start. I would guess, because I don't think Brian Hoyer is all that great.
I cover this team, and I'm with you.
He's a solid player, but chances are, given the fact that he doesn't have a great supporting cast, let's put it that way, and he's probably not going to have Josh Gordon, okay? If he doesn't have those components, then it's pretty average, and he's going to look like a pretty average quarterback who, by the way, is coming back, you know, from an ACL tear. So he's going to look even gimpy. And remember, Tom Brady, who was a far and away a better quarterback than Brian Hoyer, looked really bad when he first came back from his injury. Any quarterback, RG3, they all looked a little awkward. They couldn't set their feet correctly. They couldn't follow through with their passes. That's going to make everybody look a little worse than they are.
Yes.
So he's going to struggle. So those 4 games, he's going to look like he's maybe getting a little bit better by game 4, but not enough to convince anybody in Cleveland, including the front office and coaching staff, that they need to stick with him.
Right.
It's going to end up probably be maybe, you know, if they're lucky, 2-2, but more likely 1-3. And that's going to give an opportunity for Manziel to come in and hopefully against some lesser competition, by the way, because the early games are tougher.
Yeah.
That he'll come in against a weaker team. I think it might be Tennessee in week 5 and a beatable matchup for him. And you can come in and run all over the field. And they were like, I think the 4th most generous defense to running backs. And essentially Manziel's a running back, let's be honest. Okay. So when he's taking off on foot after his first read, they're going to give up a ton of yards to him. He's going to look like a superhero, and he's going to be named the starter the following week. You know, anyway, so the permanent starter. So, yeah, absolutely, stash him if you have room on a deep bench. You certainly want to. And Dynasty Leagues, absolutely, because he's going to be the heir apparent. Right now, he's learning, you know, how to use this offense and how to become a pro. And it's going to take time. And 4 weeks will give him time to do that and become a better pro. As long as he really, you know, sticks his head in the playbook and learns the offense and really works hard at it, he should have no problem, because we did see flashes of what he could be, even though he wasn't perfect. We still know that he has that freakish athletic ability and can certainly, you know, win some certain matchups. So as far as Gordon's concerned, if you're in a redraft league, go ahead.
I was just saying, and the Browns are willing to let him be that quarterback too. They're not trying to, you know, rein him in too much, pigeonhole him in, you know, into being a pocket passer too much. So, you know, whenever he does get this offense, he's going to be allowed to run around. He's not going to be, you know, hey, you know, be a statue. You know, they're not going to be asking that of him. So he is going to have value.
Listen, in the off season, when they brought in Shanahan, who helped prep basically RG3, that was a sign.
Yep.
When they brought in Dole Logans, who, you know, coached up Jake Locker, that was a sign. Mm-hmm. So these are all guys that worked with mobile quarterbacks that know how to use, you know, the option and everything else. So I think that was a clear sign. So they do want to support him in what he does best.
Right.
But right now, I think they did the right thing initially to sort of, you know, not throw him to the fire, because he admitted that he's not ready.
Right.
And to stick him out there, you know, when he's not ready, is just going to really, you know, not help his growth as a quarterback. I think it's a smart thing. Let him learn more. Now, like I said in my article too, guys, let Brian Hoyer play himself out of that job, because
absolutely,
he will. Okay. And
absolutely,
let Manziel then take over at that point, because doing it now and saying you're the guy when he's obviously admitted he's not the guy yet, is just going to really be bad for him. We've seen that happen to rookie quarterbacks, and it's bad news. Now, for Josh Gordon, look, if you're drafting him in redraft, or let's put it this way, in Dynasty, if you had him in a Dynasty league like I did, I got rid of him in May when there was still hope that this suspension was probably going to be reduced, okay? I don't know that that's the case now. When there was hope that it was going to be reduced, I sent out feelers in my Dynasty leagues. I'm going to trade him. Let's see what I can get for him. I got Demaryius Thomas. Now, Demaryius Thomas will probably be potentially either one or two this year in receiving. He's a good citizen, and he's proven that he's a very good wide receiver, that even if Peyton Manning's not there in a couple of years, that he can still be a top wide receiver. So I did that without even looking, and I was happy that I got that in return on somebody that was still excited about potentially Josh Gordon being okay for the year and being the guy that he was the previous year, which was huge. Now, you have to make those moves. Now, in redraft, you're drafting him late, after the 11th round, when you're taking flyers on players anyway.
Right.
But you don't want to draft him early, you know, in your redraft league. I mean, why? That's like buying a lottery ticket and then burning it, you know, without scratching it. Why? I mean, it's essentially, you could have had another player that's actually going to help you. You don't know if that player is going to help you or not. Now, when you get to a certain point in your draft, at the end of your draft, like say rounds 10 to like 16, some of those guys are flyers. You know, the high upside guys we talked about, Darius Green, Travis Kelce,
right,
Josh Gordon, at this point, because we don't know his fate right now. So if you draft him at that point and he's okay and he gets like a 7-game or 8-game suspension, you might still want to hold on to him, you know, because it maybe week 8 he'll still have value. Or if it's a 6-game suspension, you certainly could weather that storm, because after he comes back, he can give you 10 games of huge production, at which time Manziel will be in, you know, in the house. And he liked his one big receiver at Texas A&M, which was right, Mike Evans. So he could be the Mike Evans of Cleveland for him. So, you know, certainly, you know, that's when you want to do that. But earlier than that, if somebody gets cute because they feel like they have a good idea of what the suspension is going to be, then let them take them early, because I don't know, and a lot of people still don't know. So, you know, in your fantasy draft, again, wait a little while to take him when you take those lottery ticket picks.
So what about the strategy of trying to talk your league into pushing the draft back until after Roger Goodell announces the...
At this point, you know...
Might be thin on time.
Who the hell
time.
Knows? But, I mean, he's going to make some decision. He's going to make some decision before the season starts, obviously.
I've heard that for the past 4 weeks.
it seems like it, but, you know, the reality is that I think that, you know, he has to. I mean, he really... At this point, it seems like it's almost unethical to make the Browns wait this long, because they...
It seems like he's waiting for us to all have our fantasy drafts. I mean, it really seems like that's what Goodell's waiting for.
I don't know what he's doing, but it does cripple the Browns to the extent that, like, if he does get... It's not a year-long suspension. It's an indefinite suspension, and he can't even apply for reinstatement until 365 days after the suspension takes place. So this hurts the Browns in the long term
next
significantly.
Year. Yeah, next year, potentially.
And by the way, guys, too, we forgot all about the fact that there's, in the CBA, there's still that DUI suspension that will be tacked on at the end of that.
Right.
Yeah. So this could go on... God knows when. So, it's really hard to say. But again, if you had him in a dynasty league, if you had him in a dynasty league, I'd try to sell him. And I did in a couple of leagues. Like I said, I got him, Demaryius Thomas for him, Jordy Nelson in another league. I just got lucky because there were some people that were still hopeful that he was going to be, you know, one of those top, you know, one or two wide receivers in the league. And he still has that ability. We just don't know his fate. So I'd rather, you know, bank on guys that I know they're going to, you know, stick around, that don't have any off the field issues and yet are still in that same tier as him as far as talent is concerned and ceiling. So if you're
Come
still
on, Johnny,
able
that's,
to get something,
that's what the IR is for.
That value, then do it.
That's what the IR is for in your dynasty league. So that's what we're waiting on.
Not Josh Gordon. as far as I know, in dynasty leagues, you can't put a guy who's been suspended on your IR list. But you know, it's don't tell anybody. yes, don't tell anybody. But yeah, I mean, I like to see this really kind of play out because there are a lot of people that have invested, you know, in the, I know people that have him in like a dozen leagues. And yeah, still haven't moved him yet. They're waiting to find out. And I'm like, man, that's just awful. I mean, it's like popping a balloon in every league. It's like pop, 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 pop. I mean,
yeah,
you just can't recoup that value. That's why I say you should have done it early on, if you could get equal or close to equal value. Because even if his suspension is cut down, you still made out okay.
Right.
You know? And there's a lot of potential for him to make another mistake. He's young. He's shown that he doesn't have the greatest decision making, you know, and I think that there's potential for him to still get in trouble between now and then. And I think,
yeah,
you know, that's unfortunate. I mean, you don't want to see that because we know what a big talent he is. But yeah, he's young. And if he's out of football for a year, there's a good chance that he's going to get into trouble within that year too. And then if that happens, he's probably out of the league. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's tough. So you want to cut your losses at that point.
Staying in the AFC North, I want to talk about a couple of running back situations. You know, Ray Rice is suspended for the first two games of the season. Bernard Pierce is going to be taking over for him. Bernard Pierce, you know, is a much better suited running back for Gary Kubiak's, you know, outside zone, one-cut running kind of situation. And then you also, in Cincinnati, you have Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill, who are going to be the tandem there. And, you know, there's been a lot more, you know, runs up the gut now that we've got Hugh Jackson as the offensive coordinator, which is a kind of, you know, a running style that really benefits Jeremy Hill more than Gio, but Gio has all of this receiving potential as well. So my question here is, Bernard Pierce, can he wrest that starting job away from Ray Rice over those first two games? And the other question is, could Jeremy Hill actually have the higher fantasy upside this year over Giovanni Bernard?
Well, first of all, Pierce, that whole situation in Baltimore, I'm kind of staying away, to be honest with you. I don't really have a great feeling for any of those running backs in terms of who's going to really have a stranglehold. Maybe that's a bad choice of words, but for the Ray Rice situation and everything else, but sorry about that, guys. I really don't think that any of those running backs really have that job locked down. Right. I actually like Lorenzo Talaferro. I think he's, you know, a guy that, you know, I watched a little bit more as a, you know, the draft process was going on. I actually liked him more as a fullback. He's a really great blocker, strong runner, and he's a guy you can pretty much get for free in your fantasy draft. So you can grab him late. And he's a guy that could certainly ascend. Whenever there's a muddy situation at running back, I like to kind of grab the, you know, the lottery ticket. You know, I'll take you back to last year when people were talking about Isaiah Pede and Darrell Richardson. I was kind of quietly saying,
Stacy.
And I grabbed him. I shoved him on my bench, and I waited. And then after a few weeks, he was the guy, and he never relinquished a job. Now, Talaferro could be that guy. So,
plus
again, you know, it's a little muddy. Exactly. And like you said, I do think that Pierce is a better fit. But those two can cancel each other out. So that kind of not really in one's corner over the other. So Talaferro is a guy that I'm kind of championing a little bit. If he's there late, just stash him on your bench for a couple of weeks. See how it plays out. Because I do think he could be, you know, because he is an excellent blocker and he's a good power runner, has some wiggle too. I think he's somebody that could certainly, you know, grab that job and take hold. Because look, this isn't a dynamo of an offense. They're still going to run the football. They're still going to feed the number one wide receiver in Torrey Smith. And that's a Kubiak offense, and they're going to hit the tight ends too over the middle. That's what they are. That's their identity. So it's not going to be this big wide open offense. It's just not designed that way. So, you know, you want to see maybe an opportunity for one running back to sort of take control of that offense, because Kubiak's always been that way too. He's always kind of had one lead guy. and you know, maybe a mix in of a change of pace back. But so you want to kind of see maybe how that plays out. Maybe stash the lesser of the three as far as ADP is concerned, mm-hmm. and see if they kind of climb the depth chart a little bit. So.
And then Bernard versus Jeremy Hill.
Where were we now? Okay, I'm sorry. Cincinnati.
That's okay.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm fighting my allergies too, man. It's really bad right now. But
it's goldenrod season out there.
Situation. We're just talking about the. Yeah, it is. It's all those crazy, wacky stuff that's floating around the air. But the situation we were talking about last night on Twitter. You know, Evan Silva and a bunch of us, and you know, it's kind of a divided. You know, split in fantasy circles. A lot of people still are very high on Gio Bernard. And from what I've seen, as far as his ADP is concerned, and from what he's doing between the tackles, as you noted too,
yeah,
Andrea, is that, you know, he hasn't looked great between the tackles, and that we've seen Hill look a lot better and more physical. This just kind of feels like, you know, like a lot of those situations around the NFL where we get excited for the shifty, smaller back, and that's sort of the square peg in the round hole. This right. feels like, you know, CJ Spiller in Buffalo, where people forget about Fred Jackson. You know, you shouldn't, because they're better fits for the offense. And it feels that same way with Gio Bernard, and the ADPs aren't really shifting all that much. So Hill's still a value, while Bernard's still going very high. I don't get it. And it's probably because, again, the community is pretty split. There's still people that are, you know, trumpeting, you know, or championing the Gio Bernard train a little bit and saying that this, he's still the guy. He's still going to have a volume. The coaches are all saying he's going to have a volume situation. I don't see it. I don't see anybody being as stubborn, you know, especially somebody like Jackson, who's really had a pretty solid impact on offenses, you know, throughout his career. I don't see him being so stubborn that he's going to keep letting Gio Bernard run into a brick wall every week. I don't see that happening. I see a role for Bernard,
yeah.
you know, where maybe we see the shift a little bit. Maybe this becomes like in the past, like Stephen Ridley, Shane Vereen,
right.
where Bernard is Shane Vereen.
Right.
And that's like still a very good for both players, but it would then put the shift of gears a little bit, maybe making Hill the number one lead guy, gets the early down and the goal line stuff, whereas Bernard becomes sort of the change of pace third down guy.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing, but it's not a good thing if you're spending a high pick on Gio Bernard.
Yeah, a lot of people are I've seen him, you know, go consistently, you know, second round, early third round kind of guy, and yeah. then I see what's been happening.
Too high.
Yeah. It's too high, and based on what I've seen in the preseason, and I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that Hugh Jackson is the kind of coordinator, as we saw, you know, a few years ago in San Diego. I recall so vividly the Chargers playing the Ravens, and Norv just sending Sproles up the gut right into Haloti Ngata, play after play after play. You know, regardless of how effective that was. By the way, not effective. Hugh, you know, is a little bit more willing to be, you know, to adapt to situations. And I don't see him throwing Gio up the gut against nose tackles and hoping for something to change. Especially, you know, if he wants to go between yeah. the tackles, and obviously, you know, if Green Ellis sticks on that roster, it's going to be in a veteran kind of mentorship role, that job would go to Jeremy Hill.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So before we let you go, I want to discuss something that I've just seen, you know, just spoken about amongst the fantasy football community. It went from kind of a murmur to a loud din, and that's this zero running back idea. because it feels like yeah. it feels like it flies in the face of everything everybody has kind of been championing over the past few years. You know, there's not a lot of bell cow running backs. Get them early, get them often, get them early, get them often.
Yep.
And now, you know, there's a whole philosophy of save it for later. You know, get the Jimmy Grahams, get your top receivers, grab a Peyton Manning or a Drew Brees, do all that, and then see what's left at running back. that to me is just scary. But maybe it's not so scary.
Right.
Can you enlighten us on zero running back?
Yes. All right. Well, first of all, I'll touch on that real quickly. Something that was done most recently by Sean Siegel over at RotoViz. It actually was an older idea that's sort of been repackaged and repurposed.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that Sean stole this idea. He's just sort of pushing this idea a little bit more than some people. This was something actually done by Matt Waldman from Football Guys, actually, who really had an upside down draft strategy, which was like you zig when everybody else zags, and you flip your draft upside down. Whatever your strategy was of the time, you just change that around a little bit. And
right.
I think when I wrote my strategy piece this year, you know, I said basically the best strategy right now is to not have a strategy, is to really go into your draft, you know, really waiting and seeing how things play out, and then sticking to the guys that you think are going to be the most impactful, regardless of position, and draft those players.
Right.
Doesn't mean I'm advocating you grab a quarterback first, or you grab five running backs first,
right,
or all wide receivers for four rounds. Not at all. I'm saying if you happen to say you pick Jimmy Graham at pick number 8, okay,
mm-hmm,
and it comes back around to you again, and Rob Gronkowski's there, maybe you want to pick Rob Gronkowski. Or there's just a running back there that you didn't expect to be there, that you maybe you want to take DeMarco Murray. And then for whatever reason, people are freaked out because Gronkowski's not playing enough. You know, he's being kid-gloved by Belichick. Mm-hmm. And you actually are lucky enough to get, you know, Rob Gronkowski in the third round. So now you can get Graham, DeMarco Murray, and Gronk in three rounds. I mean, that's not necessarily a strategy, but it's what you think is the best value for you at that point, and the guys with the highest point ceiling possible. Because look, if you have a rankings board and you rank your players and you say, I like this player, this player, this player, this player, and I think they have the highest ceiling fantasy wise or potential, and you're able to go down that board and pick those players without any idea of having to fill roster spots,
mm-hmm,
necessarily, that's probably still the best way to start your draft. You know, the first few rounds, first four or five rounds, to say, okay, I don't care. I'm going to pick two running backs here because I think they're the best value, and then I'm going to take three wide receivers. Or I'm going to take a quarterback like Drew Brees in round 5 because he shouldn't be in round 5. He should be going around before. So I'm going to take him at 5, even though I, you know, was thinking about taking a running back, but there's just no way I can pass up 40 touchdowns a season, because you know Drew Brees is going to throw 40 touchdowns this year.
Right.
Because he's done it every damn year.
No,
he does
it every year.
Since 2010.
5,000 yards,
so,
40
I mean,
touchdowns. Bam.
Yeah. Yeah, that's who he is. So if you want to pass that up, then fine. But I can't. So I'll take him. Even though my idea going into the draft was, I'm going to wait on a quarterback because I can get Jay Cutler and I can get, you know, Carson Palmer late. And I know that they're in pass-happy offenses.
Right.
You can still do that.
Sure.
You can still get one of those guys, but I still want to take Drew Brees early because I know exactly what he's going to do. There's not an if with Drew Brees.
No.
It's you know what's going to happen. So I'm still going to take that, but you don't know that that opportunity is going to be there when you're drafting. It just so happens that it does. So that's really the best strategy, is to be flexible, draw up your board of the top players that you think on your fantasy board. It might not even be – you know, it might be just your own. It might not be to anybody's rankings, my rankings or RotoWorld's or, you know, CBS or anybody else. It, just your rankings,
mm-hmm,
and go by that board. And if you are able to get those players in the first few rounds, then great. Then maybe you can start being a little bit more flexible and saying, okay, now I'm going to, you know, get another running back here and really like stock my roster. That's fine. But never lowball yourself. Never get into a draft and say, well, I really have to find a running back, so I'm going to take a guy I'm not sure about because I need a running back. You're not going to do that. You shouldn't do that. It's like anything else. It's like going into a store and you're going to buy a TV, and they're all out of that TV. So you're going to get the TV that's available.
Don't
you know,
get
because,
the RCA.
No, just don't. Then don't get it. Yes. Don't get the TV. I mean, drive to another store and get a TV that's a little different, but very similar, but maybe you're getting it for $100 less because it's a round later in your draft, wink, wink, and it's not a TV at all. It's an actually a wide receiver. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, that's the reality, though. It's kind of like that. It's really about being a good consumer and being smart about how you spend that money, what value are you getting for that pick. And that's really the best strategy. Every single year, any year that I've really done the best I absolutely can in the league, it's always because I didn't reach on a player. Always because if I, you know, this is the other part of it, about it that I really, you know, I always have to say, look about, you know, think about the usage in the role. Are you a lead back? Do you stay on the field on third down? I want that running back. Are they in a good offense? I want that running back. Wide receiver, are you the number one target? Are you the most heavily targeted player on that offense? Yes. Quarterback, I mean, are you in a pass-happy offense? With your percentage, are you throwing more than you're running? Then I want that quarterback. You know, and that's pretty simple. And if you do enough research, basic research for that, then you could still be okay in your league, even if you don't spend a lot of time on this. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is just kind of understanding football. Understanding, you know, you guys do. You guys follow football really closely. You know the teams that are going to be really good. And look, another example, if your defense sucks, then you're probably going to throw a lot. You know, if your team is balanced, like say like New England right now with their defense and their offense, then your running backs and your wide receiver is going to be fine because they're going to be balanced. Because at the end of the games, they're going to be running a lot. So – you know, that's what you really have to think about when you draft. You just can't go in and say, I'm going to get the name guy and this and this and this and this, because that's just the worst way to do it. It's just, you're not going to succeed unless you kind of understand, you know, that maybe people are going to be like, here's another example. People are going to be afraid to draft players in the NFC West. Why? Because if you've really been following football, you know, there's been a slew of injuries to Arizona. You know, key injuries. There's been some injuries to San Francisco. Now in St. Louis, their situation. You know, it's Seattle really, and everybody else. I mean, it's kind of tilted a little bit. So now
you're not afraid of drafting Marshawn Lynch. You can't just draft because exactly. You're afraid of Richard.
But you can't draft because you can't just draft because you have this perception that every defense in that division is a juggernaut.
Right.
So I'm not going to draft Zach Stacy. Why? Zach Stacy was great last year when everybody was healthy in the NFC West. Marshawn Lynch was great last year when everybody was healthy in the NFC West.
Yep.
Frank Gore, too. So you're still going to draft them even more so this year because those defenses are depleted. So you really want those players even though people are down on them. So their values now. You know, just have to be reactive to what's happening and capitalize when other people aren't really paying attention.
The other thing I think is that really important. Yes, absolutely. The other thing I think is important is to know your league. You know, for example, my redraft league, yep. This is my fourth season with these guys. And I know that these guys are very intelligent about football, do their research, know what they're doing. You know, they're not drafting somebody because it's a player on their favorite team. And that makes it pretty unpredictable. Now we have two keepers this year. So you know, what I'm doing, I'm taking a pretty casual approach to my preparation because I know that we're all pretty smart and I don't know who's going to be necessarily available when. Nobody really overbuys in my league. I know that I'm taking Calvin. This is my last year I can keep him. Calvin's going to be my first round pick. I've got Alshon stealing him in the seventh. And then everything else is kind of up for grabs. So what I've done is just compiled a list of names. And, you know, and kind of rank them based on how I would prefer to have them. And if they're there, they're there. They're not, they're not. And kind of, you know, just adapt on the fly. Because, you know, depending on your, you know, maybe it's a bunch of coworkers who don't really know a lot about football. Or maybe it's a bunch of industry guys who have been following all these developments since February. So you kind of have to also make, you know, plan your strategy based on, you know, who's in your league, what kind of league it is.
Right. I mean, understand your scoring, understand,
right,
you know, that certain positions will be elevated. You know, if it's a full PPR, then you're probably going to go, you know, as much as I talked about be flexible with your strategy, you probably still want to get, you know, some of the top wide receivers first, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, tight ends like Graham and Gronk, who are essentially number ones in their offense. You want to get right. those guys first over, you know, taking running backs, because you can find the pass catching running backs later and still have a lot of value in a full PPR league. Now, if you're in a modified like half point PPR, then it's different because it sort of washes everything out. But just understand your scoring. If you're in a standard league, it's about touchdowns. So you want to get the red zone guys too. You know, and that's really what it comes down to. Just understand what your league scoring is, what the format is, and kind of really do your research. Like you said, make your list. Understand that, you know, these are still the players that you want to target. You can zig and zag a little bit if there are players that maybe you didn't think of, but they're there and they present a value, and maybe they weren't on your list. I've done that recently in mocks. I mean, I've taken players that I didn't think I would take, and now I'm kind of high on those players because I keep seeing them at that value position. I keep wanting to get, you know, an Eric Decker, you know, because he's the Rodney Dangerfield of fantasy, it seems. Nobody wants him. And I think Geno Smith looks really good right now. So I'm still taking him as a wide receiver three, you know. And again, we talked about Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks is going way before Eric Decker. Yes. And really, Eric Decker has actually done something in this league. So take Eric Decker all day over Brandon Cooks, you know.
Yeah, but of course, you know, if you're in a work league and Joe from accounting is a huge Steeler fan, you know, go and take Antonio Brown in the third round.
That's Joe.
Then get him upset and let him have Heath Miller, Roethlisberger, and Le'Veon Bell while, you know, guys like Eric Decker or, you know, Marcus Colston are just sitting there. You know, take advantage of those homers in your lesser experienced leagues.
And yes, if you're in Andrea's fantasy cliche league, please take advantage if it's you're in the league with the guy who picks all the homers. No, but then you're right, though. There is somebody in every league.
I've been that in those leagues, yes.
Especially if you're in a work league or something. Oh, man, there's the idiot who takes the Seattle defense in the middle of the draft. You know, look, take your you can stream defense and kicker. I said this last year on this podcast. Stream defense and kicker. I still believe in that strongly. There's no reason you shouldn't, because you really can get matchup to matchup. You can find a defense any week, drop them, whatever. You might find one that you might want to keep. I mean,
that's what happened to me.
Some teams that I think they're going to have really good. Yeah, I mean, I love the Saints this year. Mm-hmm. I think they're a really good, tough defense that's going to be making plays this year. I really like Tampa Bay, too, as well. So, you know, if you grab the Patriots, you know, in the 14th round and you keep them, I'm not mad at you, because I think they're going to be really opportunistic this year and be really aggressive. So, and that's okay. I mean, especially if you draft a team defense that, say, you know, has a bye week 11, by then you're a playoff team most likely.
Right.
So if you drafted a defense that's going to kick ass all year and score points for you, then that's fine. You don't have, that's one less thing you have to worry about all year. So I don't have a problem with that. But I'm also fine with streaming and not drafting a defense or a kicker when I make my initial draft. And the reason for that is I'd rather absolutely maximize my draft first with a bunch of players and then take a real good look, sit back and say, all right, who can I expend week one? Who can I expend? Mm-hmm. You know, by maximizing the amount of skill players that you have on offense, then you can really sit back and say, well, there's no way I'm cutting this guy. There's no way I'm cutting this guy. And you can kind of discern from that. If you take them already, then it's already been made a decision, you know, but you didn't give yourself an opportunity to really grab somebody, like say you grab the backup running back, okay, instead of a kicker. And the starting running back now gets hurt, you know, in week one. Now you've got this backup running back on your team, and like, oh boy, now I can either hold on to him because he has this huge value, or I'm going to go to the team that has that running back that got hurt in practice, and now I'm going to trade, you know, this guy and another player and get a really big time player in return. You know, and that's how you have to think. You have to say, okay, now I have something that's worth something, that's tangible to somebody else. They need this player way more than I need this player.
Right.
But I would love to package this player and some scrub that I don't want to them to get, you know, Alshon Jeffrey. And you could do that if you are smart about who you take late. Always try to take a handcuff player, mainly running backs, because running backs get hurt. And you can always find somebody that drafts DeMarco Murray early, doesn't remember to take Lance Dunbar. You know, somebody that takes Jamaal Charles doesn't get Nile Davis. You know, you can get those guys later, stash them on your bench if you don't need them. And then when that player, if that player gets hurt, now you've got somebody that's going to inherit this huge running back workload.
Right.
And I think that's really smart. I've been saying that too about Sproles. Look, you talked about Sproles earlier, about he was a bad fit when he was running between the tackles. Very true in that situation.
Into Haloti Ngata.
You watched him behind. Right, into Haloti Ngata. But in the NFC East,
yeah,
behind the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line, yes. Darren Sproles actually looked like a pretty nifty between the tackles runner. Plus,
and against the Cowboy defense.
And against the Cowboy defense twice.
Right. Right. So now if you – exactly. So now if you draft him, if somebody else drafts, you know, Shady McCoy, and you grab, you know, who's kind of falling out of favor now, Darren Sproles late in your draft, you stash him, he's still going to have some week-to-week value as a flex anyway, probably. But if Shady gets hurt, who's now – I think recently he's had a thumb injury and a toe injury, if I'm not
mistaken.
He's got baby turf toe. Yeah.
So baby turf toe,
and he had a thumb injury in the last preseason game. They pulled him out of the game, and
if he gets dinged up again this year,
you know, he could miss significant time. And if that happens, then you've got somebody that instantly becomes the lead guy, I think, in Sproles, mm-hmm. because of what he brings to the table and what trust he has from Chip Kelly. I mean, remember, I tell people this. Chip Kelly traded draft capital for Darren Sproles. People think that he fell off the waiver wire. No, that's not how it happened. He traded for him because he wanted him on that team.
Right.
He knew he could be a weapon. So as much as some people are down on Sproles, I think he has some immediate, maybe not full starter value, but I think he'll have, you know, a chunk, maybe a 60 to 70% chunk of that offense as the starter if something happened to McCoy. So he's somebody that you could grab later. And those are always the guys that I want to stash on the bench, is the running back that has a clear path to the number one. So Jerick McKinnon in Minnesota.
Yes.
If that, something happens to Adrian Peterson, he becomes – I mean, he's super talented, a little raw, but a freak talent. He could
Absolutely.
Become like that Larry Johnson Priest Holmes situation where
yes.
he just takes over and becomes the number one guy in fantasy. Again, those are the guys that you can grab very, very late, stash them on your bench. People forget at the end of your draft. And, you know, those are the guys you want to hold on for a little bit because you just never know. And it happens every single year. Somebody gets hurt or somebody plays themselves out of a job if they're on a shaky ground situation at running back. And someone always ascends. It happens every single year. So, you know, even if you're – I like Rashad Jennings, but, you know, Andre Williams, as much as he's not a pass catcher, they would still feed him 20 times a game up the middle if he became the lead guy. Even though I don't necessarily like him as much as I like Jennings in, you know, that McAdoo offense where you need to be a pass catching – you know, running back in that West Coast offense, I think Williams could still be effective, again, as just a downhill guy that could just carry the rock 20 times. I think that still would be – so he's another guy that you could grab a little bit later, even though his ADP is a little high now. If it falls a little bit, he's still a guy that you want to stash because, it's again, that opportunity would be there. And Jennings was hurt recently. You know, running backs just get hurt. I mean – They take the most punishment of any offensive skill player, really. You think about it, because they're getting carries, they're getting hit by multiple players, they're blocking, you know, they're running out pass patterns, they're getting hit by defenders. They take the most punishment of any offensive skill player. So yeah, it's they're going to be the most injured, obviously. Yeah. I mean, so stock up on those guys a little bit late. Grab one or two or three at the end of your draft, more so than wide receivers, because I think availability of wide receivers will be there on the waiver wire. You can always find somebody that can help you out week to week. So, yeah, always stack up a few lottery ticket running backs.
So that was very thorough.
There's nothing. it's always important to be thorough when we're talking about fantasy football, though. I mean, everybody's got their drafts. Most people have a lot of drafts coming up this week.
Yes.
Obviously, it's a lot of information to process, so it's always good to have a nice breakdown. Obviously, you can make your list, you can make your rankings of players, but ultimately it comes down to being logical about who is actually going to have a chance to be really productive, and then going, kind of with your gut and not saying, well, I have to get this position here, and if I don't, if I'm not in a situation where I can get Jimmy Graham in the first round, then I don't know what I'm doing at tight end, then I don't know what you're doing in fantasy football. You can't be so locked into a specific player in a specific round and then not have any sort of backup or any, any other recourse.
No, I think a good key is to just to know who you don't want to draft.
Yes. There's just also the importance of knowing
guys,
who you do not want to
draft. No guys that, it's like people may be up on this guy, but I'm just not feeling it, or
I'm not drafting Ryan Matthews this year. I could be paid to draft Ryan Matthews.
Personally,
but that's just me.
Hey, it's funny that you picked that team. Personally, I don't like Phillip Rivers, and I just don't want to root for Phillip Rivers on a weekly basis. So I'm not going to be drafting.
See, that's I don't know.
If you want to draft him,
now
go ahead and draft him. He has a great year. Fine,
he's going to have a great year.
Hey, he can have a fine year, and I'm not gonna doubt that. There's plenty of quarterbacks that are out there who are gonna have a fine year that aren't gonna play on my team. I'm just saying that I don't want to
root
for Phillip Rivers.
Andrea, now see, Brian fits right into with the Steelers Homer guy in the stereotype league, so. I'm not going to draft that guy because I hate
his face.
This
has nothing to do with Homer.
I can capitalize on his folly were I in the same league as him.
I would know
for a fact he wants Matthew Stafford, so I can – I'm
Hey,
free
there's people that I'm going to be drafting against that are going to listen to this, all right? So maybe Stafford's
he
on my radar.
Stafford Mathard. Yes.
Riley Cooper is not getting drafted by me. I don't care if he's going to be able to have a good year. I'm not drafting him.
And with that rousing anti-racist comment by Brian, I think that'll close our fantasy
draftacular
here with Rumford Johnny. Johnny, thank you so much
for
joining us. It's always the utmost pleasure.
An honor and a pleasure.
Yes, an honor and a pleasure having you join us.
And
before
please,
we let you go, please
yeah,
let
please,
us,
by
our,
all
our,
means, go ahead. Go, yeah, go ahead.
Before we let you go, please let our glorious audience know where they can find you around the interwebs.
Yes. Well, first of all, you can find my PIC, partner in crime and co-founder, Ryan Forbes, at RIFO18 on Twitter. Our Two Monks handle is at Two Monks FF. At me, at Rumford Johnny, of course. And please, by all means, tune in and subscribe on iTunes to the Two Monks Fantasy Football Podcast. Tomorrow is our preseason wrap-up with the illustrious, the wonderful, the great Mr. Evan Silva will be on our podcast tomorrow. And we're going to get all the intel on the – we'll fight a little bit because, Evan and I, we have our little scraps about certain players and stuff.
Get a little headbutton sometimes.
It should be fun. And yeah, and it'll be again. If you're people are listening to this podcast, please be sure to check that one out too. You get even more, ready for your fantasy, drafts and everything else. You'll be really super prepared.
Yeah, then they could be completely paralyzed when it comes to their draft.
They'll be overwhelmed by all of the intel. Yes, of course.
Wait, what was I supposed to do in the third round?
Is there a third round in this draft? I don't even know.
Exactly.
No, I gotta say it's always wonderful having you on, Johnny, and we really appreciate you helping us clear the air about some of the more, you know, controversial and confounding players and topics heading into this fantasy draft. So hopefully I draft well tomorrow night, and so do all of our listeners whenever they draft.
Absolutely. Good luck to everyone. Remember, let the draft come to you. Don't chase on runs if somebody goes crazy and there's a run of quarterbacks. You don't need to do that. Don't go nuts. Be patient. Be chill. Put your feet up. Have a beer. You could totally dominate and let everybody else freak out. I'm in an auction draft tomorrow night. Actually, not tomorrow night. Thursday night with a lot of industry folks, and it's going to be great. And the key to an auction draft, by the way, guys, is exactly that. Is to not panic, because initially everybody wants the top five running backs. They're willing to pay anything they have to get those running backs. And you can just sit back and watch them fight over those pieces. It's almost like five pieces of filet mignon, which I know, Andrea, you're like me, you're a foodie. Filet mignon really kind of sucks. It doesn't have a lot of
flavor. I'll wait out for the ribeye.
But everybody covets that. Exactly. You get a ribeye, you get a little hanger steak a little bit later, get a lot of flavor, a little bit more fat, and you get those guys, you know, those running backs a little bit later at a cheaper price, and they're going to be just as delicious for your fantasy team. So don't freak out. Just let the draft come to you.
I do prefer my players succulent.
Well, hey, we're going off the deep end. Let's wrap this thing up.
All right, Johnny, thanks again so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll all raise our either theoretical or actually tangible fantasy football championship belts at the end of this season.
Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. I like that you use that analogy, but yeah.
Of course.
I'll be on the top rope. I'll be sweating profusely, holding up that championship belt, and, you know, just letting the crowd noise wash over me. So, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know what you're saying. All right. Well, thanks again, and have a wonderful evening, Johnny. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks again to our great friend of the podcast here, Rumford Johnny from Two Mugs Fantasy Football, for joining us to help us make more sense of this fantasy football season.
That preview was, dare I say, fantastic.
Woo! So I hope that everybody, you know, got what they needed to, you know, could write down a few names, can, you know, formulize a strategy for any drafts they have coming up, and feel more prepared than they did before listening to this episode of the F-Ball podcast.
I think the idea with the volume of information that we've just put forth for everyone to ingest, I'd say that the best thing for everyone would be to glean information that they felt was particularly relevant to them and their strategy. Because if you try and just take it all in, and it's like I said at the end there, you're just going to be paralyzed when it comes to draft, and you're going to end up picking somebody panic-wise and then regretting it.
Either that, or you're going to be in a 10-team league where all 10 teams are owned by yourself, so you can draft every single person that you want.
That'd be ideal.
But that doesn't make any sense. And plus, you'd have to, you know, let's say you have like a $35 buy-in per team, and then you got to like shell that out 10 times
to yourself,
and then you just win it. And
then you're beating yourself for a belt. I don't know.
Yeah, that's...
There's a couple
of
missteps.
Yeah, there's a couple of missteps there. I don't think that's how it's done. So I hope everybody enjoyed our special edition Fantasy Football Draft-tacular 2014 preview.
Hopefully you found that useful.
Episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast with myself, Brian, and Rumford Johnny. We'll be back later this week to have our traditional, if you will, episode of the podcast. We will be continuing on our divisional previews with the AFC West and Chris Hansen from Bleacher Report, who is, of course, the AFC West lead writer. So stay tuned for that later in the week. And until then, I'm Andrea Hengst. I am the AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can find me on TeamStream or just search me on the internet. I exist there. I'm also a fantasy football contributor for Pro Football Focus. And you can find me on Twitter at FBallAndrea, F-B-A-L-L underscore Andrea.
And, of course, I'm Brian. You can find my Twitterings at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Thank you all for listening. May all of the fantasy football forces be with you. And, again, thank you to Johnny for joining us again this evening.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back on Wednesday night to talk about things not fantastical. This is the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Peace.
Later.